We look at the life and legacy of the photographer and filmmaker Oscar Marzaroli, who until his untimely death in 1988 produced a remarkable record of Glasgow and post-war Scotland. Oscar's photographs have become synonymous with a regeneration of a disaffected nation in the throes of political, cultural and social change, and are now viewed as an important historical documentation of a lost society. Singer-songwriter Ricky Ross discusses Oscar's life and work with family, friends and colleagues in Oscar Marzaroli, The Man Who Captured Scotland.
In 1986, my band Deacon Blue started to record their debut album, Raintown. Around that time, I became interested in the photographs of Oscar Marzaroli. Oscar's work was portraying the Glasgow I recognised as an outsider to the city, and the songs I was writing for this record had all been set firmly within the city boundaries.
There's a man I meet, walks up our street, he's a worker for the council. It's been 20 years.
As an outsider to Glasgow, I related to these photographs, not because of the familiar settings, but because the stories of human struggle were the same stories I was interested in telling in our songs. So who was he, and why, 20 years after his death, is interest in his work, like this film, increasing?
Glasgow grew rich on the tides of the Clyde. The river itself grew dirtier and dirtier. Strict controls and cleaning up measures are now exercised by the Clyde River Purification Board. And by 1980, the river water will be pure enough to support fish once again.
I met up with Oscar's wife Anne in Cafe Gandolfi, a lively, bustling restaurant in the heart of Glasgow's merchant city. Oscar came to Scotland from Castiglione in Italy when he was 2 years old. And when he was in his early 20s, he met his wife at art school.
I thought he was quite good looking.
He was very tall.
Very tall, very handsome, very charming. I decided to do sculpture. I don't know quite why, probably seen a film that somebody was a sculptor and thought that looks quite nice. We had a lot of arguments because I didn't see the point to photography.
Really? Uh-huh. You didn't consider it real art?
No, not really.
But I mean, it might be quite interesting. You must have been a student, and presumably he was making some kind of living.
Yes.
Doing something to do with photography.
Yes.
Did that not impress you?
No. Not easily impressed.
He was very tall, good-looking, and had a big black beard and wore Russian hats. And this was these were the days of Harris tweed jackets and nylon shirts, and Oscar always had beautifully cut dark clothes. Mm-hmm. Everyone wears dark clothes now, but he seemed to be the first.
Lewis Cameron, the first chairman of the Marzaroli Trust, set up after Oscar's death and a great friend of Oscar's.
Oscar and I were quite close neighbours. I think the wives got to know each other first, and within a short time of the wives meeting, I was introduced to Oscar. And he cut quite an exotic figure in those days. We're talking about the early 60s. As if that wasn't enough, he was also in the film business and married to an artist. So he cut quite a figure among us. And I was always interested in the cinema, so we soon got talking about that. But the strange thing was that I wasn't aware of Oscar as a stills photographer then, but only as someone in the film industry.
And was he, at that time, more Scottish or more Italian?
I would say that, essentially, he was always Italian. But when he went to Italy, he realised how Scottish he was. You know, when he actually was with other Italians, they irritated him a bit.
Mm.
And he wanted back to Scotland where he could call a spade a spade.
And you lived in Glasgow. You obviously you started a family, had a house in Glasgow. And would Oscar have considered himself a Glaswegian?
Very much. Very much. He loved the place. He loved the people. He just felt at home. Mm. Yeah, it was his home.
As a Dundonian living and working in Glasgow, I totally understand how people come to feel about the city. Maybe it's something to do with Glasgow people not leaving you alone. They'll talk to you whether you want to speak or not. In the 60s, when Lewis and Oscar were neighbours, Oscar was making films for a living and taking photos for fun.
At that time, yes, he was heavily involved in movie making as a cameraman and director. So as far as I was concerned, he was a movie man. I had an old convertible, so we drove through the Glasgow streets, and I was so chuffed because I was part of the film business, and he was filming all the lights. And then we went back to the house, and he got it all set up, and we were able to watch it within a couple of days.
As Glasgow prepares for the 21st century, the pattern of life changes. Tenement life, with its Julie pieces and wee shops, is disappearing. In its place, shopping precincts, located with new housing and new roads in mind. Shopping precincts themselves traffic-free, but provided with parking areas so that cars can serve and not confound the housewife and her family.
You mentioned, being the chauffeur to his moving films.
Yes,
and
yes.
That was an industry memory of mine, because no sooner had we gotten in a car to do location shooting for what was possibly an album cover, we were all stopping on very precarious bits of hard shoulder on the motorway, and Oscar was diving across, breaking goodness knows how many traffic laws to get positions for cameras. I mean, was that just a habitual with him? Was it to see something and then, I need to...
Yes, that's right. He was a bit of a darter, and he was good at rounding everybody up. But that was him. He was constantly on the move, you know.
I mean, you couldn't really do that either nowadays, could you? I mean, you couldn't go and just point your camera at Wayne's and the Corbels.
No. No, you'd be quickly huckled and have a job explaining what you were doing there. But he just had this camera with him all the time, and very touchy-feely, very mobile, very Italian.
Finally tonight, over a 30-year period, Oscar Marzaroli's camera recorded images of Glasgow, and the Gowples in particular. Today, three bronze statues based on one of his most famous pictures were unveiled. Aileen Clark was there.
In a photograph of three wee boys running about in their mammy's high heels,
we're at the corner of Cumberland Street and Queen Elizabeth Street in the Gorbals. In August 2008, a statue based on one of Oscar's photographs was unveiled, part of the Gorbals Arts Project. It's three young boys trying on their mum's high heels. It's a very, very famous photograph of Oscar's. I'm also with Martin Singleton, who is a colleague of Oscar, co-founded Ogam Films with Oscar. What do you make of the statues?
Yeah, I like them. I like them a lot.
They're what would you say they're made out of, Martin? They're
bronze.
Bronze cast, and so they're kind of dark in colour, but the high heels have all been left in silver.
It's a nice touch, yeah.
What was the ambition of setting up the company?
It sounds pretentious to say this now, I think, but we had ideals that we really wanted to set a goal and work in film and produce documentary in Scotland.
So did that mean that there were quite high quality things to work on?
I wouldn't say they're high quality. We'd like to aspire to that. It was a fantastic training ground. But we all worked for the Agency of Films of Scotland at that time. They held the purse strings.
On the north coast of Scotland, only 15 miles from Cape Wrath, there is a village called Ballinakeel, a special kind of village.
My memory is that I've seen clips from some of them. There's one of them building the new dams and the hydro project for Albert Bellocchi, isn't there?
Yeah.
And there's some about new towns as well, is that right?
Lots of new towns,
yeah.
Like Erskine and Cumbernauld.
Yeah.
And, of course, in Glasgow, the changing face of Glasgow, which, of course, Oscar was so passionately involved in his own way and covering it in stills.
And the long quiet of winter, they stitch and sew, gouge and carve, hammer at their forges, and build with their clay. Not an easy life. The quest for the beautiful never is.
Did it do well, the company?
Ogam Films? No. No. In one word, no. We survived. Right. I don't know how we survived.
Really?
But no, it was a struggle to keep the door open.
Tell me this, when did the, when you were working with him in 1967, still wasn't known really as a stills photographer. It was many years later before these photographs were published. Mm. What was he doing with the photographs at that point?
He did produce a film when I first met Oscar. He was engaged with an editor in London, a man called Mike Pavitt, and they made a little black and white film called Dear Green Place. And Ewan McCall, Peggy Seeger sang on it, and that film obviously still in the archives.
This is Glasgow. Aye, the name is said to come from the Gaelic for dear green place. Aye, once this was a beautiful small university town, but by the end of the last century, it had become the second biggest industrial city in Britain.
As I mentioned earlier, in 1986 I'd come to admire Oscar's photographs and took some of them into the studio where we were working to show to the guys in the band. They thought they were brilliant for our album, so my next task was to set up a meeting with Oscar. I knew one man who knew him, my friend and neighbour, Frank Boyle.
Without doubt, that Oscar's work not only captured the time and the place at a particular time in Godbolt's history, but he actually got to the heart and the soul and the spirit of the people. It wasn't a flash in the pan piece of work that he did there. What he actually did was he captured them in the most honest way, which has been borne out by the fact that people still look at his books and his pictures and say, I remember. But at the time, Oscar was not aware of how big an icon he was about to be so many years after his death. You know, he was quite spectacular in his work, and probably did not know himself the full extent of a recorded history of the area that it was going to be.
I mean, that's the interesting thing, is that looking at this, in fact, one of the Glasgow's People book is sitting in front of us, but there's always that brilliant mixture of cataloguing wonderful architecture, but there's always a real busyness about the place, isn't there? There's kids and prams and grannies and men smoking and
boys people hanging football. Out windows and,
yeah.
And kids playing football and,
yeah.
And being free.
Mm.
To a certain extent, I think Oscar captured that freedom of movement and that easygoing way of life that people had then.
Ali Bali, Ali Bali Bee, when you grow up you'll go to sea. Making pennies for your daddy and me to buy Mercutor's candy.
He was obviously aware that the world was changing and Glasgow was changing at that time. Just tell us a little bit about how that area of the Gorbals has changed.
It was a very vibrant area, you know. I mean, everybody knew everybody. There were social slums there. There were terrible slums. If there was any smart English newsreel coming up, they would show the slums of the Gorbals and it immediately would be recognisable to everybody down in England that this is Glasgow. And Glasgow tried to get rid of that image. And in doing so, the Gorbals was sacrificed to this brave new world, this brave new way of living, which was based on Corbusier's high-rise flats. Unfortunately, they pulled down what were perfectly good tenements, where if they'd spent the money in renovating the tenements, the Gorbals would still be with us today. So they knew it was a social experiment in the 60s, and they carried that experiment out with tremendous disasters. Replaced it with a bigger problem than what was there already. Thankfully, they've gone back and they've revisited it. They've got some good Glasgow architects who are involved in the design of the redesign of the Gorbals, and they've made a fantastic job of it.
Fair wee genies looking up at then, her colour beans cover our with skin. Now she's getting a double chin with sucking Coulter's candy.
One of the photographs I always remember striking me again and again is one desolate picture of the Gorbals, and the rain's horizontal. There's two people walking in the background. There's a
poster for a by-election with SNP on it and so on. You know, it's difficult to know whether Oscar even wanted that to be seen in the photograph or whether it was just, again, part of the whole makeup. But was he political in his...
Very, extremely.
And can you tell us a little bit about that?
I can tell you right from the very start that one of my first dates was a CND march to Dunoon. And I wore high heels because I didn't want to march anywhere. We had many arguments about politics. I felt that marching didn't achieve anything. And he said, no, you've got to, you have to make yourself known.
If we can imagine him being over and photographing these events, really, you know, for example, the falling apart of a community in a place like Gorbals, where uh-huh. they're demolishing and redeveloping uh-huh. and so on. Did he express opinions about it all?
He thought it was appalling that people had to live in conditions that weren't good. He wasn't very sure if the solutions that were being found were the right solutions. But he thought it was right that people should be looking for solutions.
Oscar's photographs were growing in popularity during the mid to late 80s, a time when unemployment was high and Scotland was at the sharp end of Thatcher's government policies. And the crux of this time was the imposition of the poll tax. There was a growing undercurrent of unrest over the lack of a Scottish Parliament. It was a highly charged period, a time which led to a fresh expression of nationalism. Oscar was a fan of the writings of William McIlvany and approached the author to write the foreword to Shades of Grey. We met at the Centre for Contemporary Arts on Sauchie Hall Street in Glasgow, a stunning Grade A-listed building designed by Alexander Greek Thompson. It used to be the Third Eye Centre, a place Oscar knew well, where he exhibited his work.
He blinked a lot, but then so does a camera, right? Mm. And he was one of those people who presented a kind of, you know, naively innocent appearance, but at the same time was noting very carefully everything that was going on around him. And that, that sense of him was justified when I saw the later photographs and realised that that was how he spent his life, wandering around places, blinking and recording many, many images.
The Glaswegians that he documents, do you recognise them?
Absolutely. I recognise a specific time through which I lived myself, which was the deindustrialisation of Glasgow and a time of massive transition in which Glasgow, as Glasgow does, and through which Glasgow kept its identity. Because from the 60s through the 70s, I mean, the changes in Glasgow were massive. I mean, even things like the motorway, which replaced whole areas of Glasgow, and it was like replacing somebody's guts with plastic tubing. You know, you could have lost a lot of the city in that transition. And I don't think you did, because I think Glaswegians have a stubborn sense of their own place, and it's not something we yield up easily.
It's interesting you say that, because one of my favourite photographs of his is in fact a picture of one of the guys working on that motorway that bisects the city, that goes right through the heart of Anderson. Aye. And there's a guy just standing underneath the flyover that he's building, and it seems to be a very symbolic photograph of almost Oscar's love of the human, and mixed
Absolutely.
With his, almost fear of what was going to happen to the city.
Absolutely. I think so many of his photographs represent that. They represent the survival of the human in the midst of technological change and cultural change and architectural change.
What marks Oscar Marzaroli's photographs? What makes the difference with his particular photographs of that era compared to the stock press photographs of the time?
Oscar, to me, is a kind of sniper. He just went around Glasgow shooting you before he knew what was happening to you. And I think because of that, he creates images which are unmistakably authentic. There's nothing contrived or posed about them. I think, you know, if Oscar had a technique, it wasn't anything to do with elaborate camera work. It was to do with respect for everybody. What Oscar did was take the anonymous and make it reverberate with identity, with individual identity. So you look at these people, and they're caught in all kinds of situations and all kinds of poses, but they look real, and they look like a part of Glasgow. There's one photograph, very famous one, which for me exemplifies what Oscar does. It's called The Golden Hair Lass, and it's a wee lassie, about four or five, in Wellington boots, marching along a street, and the background is a devastated tenement. But you look at that wee girl and you think, she's going somewhere, don't get in her way, because she's going to get there. And to me, that was Glasgow. What Glasgow represent for me is, you know, defiance of deprivation. Glasgow has said throughout its history, you know, you think you can make circumstances that will defeat me? Come ahead, and we'll see. And that photograph exemplifies it, and that wee girl, you know, she's going somewhere, she'll get there.
What, to me, is the kind of distinguishing feature of Oscar's photographs is his response to the social environment in which he was working, and really the sensitivity and the intelligence in which he recorded that and made some kind of a comment on the lives that people were living during the time that he was working.
I'm with Ray McKenzie, senior lecturer in art history here at the Glasgow School of Art, where Oscar himself was a student.
There's always this tension between being an artist and being simply, you know, a sensitive, intelligent recorder of life as it goes on. And I guess the artistry has got to be in the skill, in the way particular situations are captured, the composition, the lighting, and so on. And I think if we were being brutally honest about this, we'd have to say that there are a lot of other photographers working in that mainstream European tradition who did it, you know, quite a bit better. But, you know, in the context of what he was doing in Glasgow, there's enough artistry in there to make them interesting to me as pictures as well as records of a situation. Their photographs are actually like good wine. It does improve over time.
And does that mean that people will still be looking at these photographs in 100 years' time?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But for the reasons that I said, because that wine is going to taste better in 100 years' time.
After suffering from TB as a young man, Oscar again became ill in his early 50s, at a time when his plans for the publication of his first book were coming together.
But he said to my daughter once that he'd had a kind of stay of execution with the TB, and that maybe this time it wasn't going to go away.
We talked earlier how really, by the time that the first book was coming out, the book really, He was an ill man, and he died not long after that book was first published. No. Within that year?
I think it came out in 87.
And he died in 88. Yeah.
The main thing he wanted to do was create this book. He did see that. Shades of Grey was a lifetime want. I can remember he came back from Edinburgh really down because Willie McIlvaine had gone to Canada. The publishers were going to postpone for another 6 months, and I knew that there might not be another 6 months. And, you know, when we saw that book in under hard covers, I really cheered because at one point it looked as if it might not.
Sing every song in Glasgow.
The second city of the empire, Mother Glasgow watches all her ways.
I was approached by Oscar to write this, and I've always had a kind of rule in life, never put off till tomorrow what you can put off till next year. So I kind of evaded it, and in fact, I went to Canada for a year. I thought that would really put the peter on it. And I came back and I was doing a reading at the Edinburgh Festival, and I looked up in the midst of reading and I saw Oscar standing blocking the entrance or the exit, as I was hoping, from the tent. I said to Oscar, look, I'm a bad bet. I haven't done it in a year, Oscar. He said, don't care. You're the one who does it, or nobody will do it. And the truth is, I wanted to write it. And I went into a hotel for a week, and I just, I'd looked at some of the photographs, and I just tried to recreate my sense of Glasgow from the time I was a student until now, and what the city has meant, and hoped that tangentially the text would refer to the photographs as the photographs would tangentially refer to the text. And Oscar was totally in agreement with that, that the writing would not be some exegesis of the photographs, page by page, but would be, you know, a kind of impressionistic portrait which would reflect to some extent the photographs.
And the tree and the fish and the bird and the bear, let Glasgow flourish.
After a long battle with cancer, Oscar died in the summer of 1988. After a short while, his wife Anne asked me if I would like to join a group of friends and contemporaries of Oscar's to form the Marzaroli Trust. The idea was to establish a permanent archive of Oscar's work.
I think it was when Oscar died, so he was comparatively young, and there was a feeling that among many of his friends that his memory and his work had to be properly administered and looked after. And I think some got together with his wife Anne, and a small group were formed and had a number of profitable meetings, and there was a little film which was shown on TV which grew out of that. And I think the work of the Trust has now been carried on mainly by the family.
My contribution to the Trust was to gather up songs for an album called The Tree and the Bird and the Fish and the Bell, songs about Glasgow by artists from the city, including Texas, The Blue Nile, Wet 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 and John Martin. All the proceeds from the album went to the Marzaroli Trust. As well as our own contribution to the album, Deacon Blue had recorded a retake on the old hymn Abide With Me, and we thought it seemed an appropriate song to dedicate to Oscar.
Take me to the place where your heart hurts most.
Is there much that the public haven't seen of Oscar's work?
There's quite a lot of stuff. There probably is another couple of books there. I think if we have a focus, is what we would like to do next, is to have the work so that it can be seen. Ultimately, we would really like to have a fixed venue of some kind to be able to show the work, change the exhibitions, and people could get a copy of the favourite picture of their work.
There isn't a permanent photographic exhibition or a place where you can see Oscar's work printed. Is that something that will change? Will we get that eventually, do you think?
What I think we need, what we desperately need, is a proper archiving of Oscar's work so that it's conserved and properly looked after and centralised and accessible to the public. But for researchers and scholars, as well as for people who simply want to look at the photographs for pleasure, as you know, different aspects of Glasgow's history get researched, that body of work will be plundered in all sorts of different ways. There's huge potential there. But I think the main thing is to get it into a condition where it's looked after and properly resourced. That's what we don't have at the moment.
One last thing that I want to ask you. You said right at the beginning that when you met him, you didn't hugely value the art of photography. Mm. Have you changed your mind?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
There, stand with your wide open hands and say, abide with me.
Oscar Marzaroli, the man who captured Scotland, was produced in Manchester by Elizabeth Foster.